Okay, Lila Tov, Erev Tov. I forgot to tell you the shir's in Hebrew. Benny's Israeli, you know. He's not really Israeli, he's Swiss. But he's been living in Israel for probably 30 years already, except for the three-year hiatus he had in Toronto. I'm sure many of you remember Dr. Gesundheit, which is, of course, you can't get a better name for a doctor, was in Toronto. I couldn't believe it. When he was here, we were talking. He's left. He's already out of here 10 years. And he made a very fascinating comment, if it's okay if I say it in public, about this warmth that he said he grew up in Switzerland, lived there for 18 years. And now he doesn't really feel any kesher to Toronto, to Switzerland. He was in Toronto only 3 years, but he feels a trend of warmth to our community. And that's when I first got to meet him, when he was here really in the Yorkheim community, basically 13 to 10 years ago. And we just had the pleasure of spending a weekend together in Connecticut at our fourth annual medical ethics conference. If anyone wants to plan for next year, please God, July 4th to 7th in Lake Placid, New York. So you can mark it on your calendar. And we're planning to have a non-medical track. For those who don't like the wonderful talks relating to medical ethics, we'll have. But that's, you have time to worry about it, but I'm just placing it in the back of your head. And I'm, Dr. Gesundheit is currently doing research in stem cells. For those who don't know, when he was in Toronto, he was doing a fellowship in hematology oncology. And at the same time, while doing this at SickKids Hospital, he got his PhD in Jewish medical ethics under Dr. Novak, I'm sure many of you know, at U of T. That's quite an accomplishment. And now he's back in Israel already for a number of years. He's working in stem cell research, doing a lot of teaching, including an online course he developed that's being used in the new medical school in Tzfat. Mazel tov to Jack Samuel on the beautiful wedding he made last night. He just walked in. So Michael was here before. He's just off the Shavrach. You guys are the tag team taking turns. So without further ado, as you may know, and I sent an email, Gimel Elul, which is ending in a few minutes, is the 77th Yortzeit of Harav Kook. So we thought this would be a very appropriate talk for the evening. Without further ado, Harav Dr. Benny Gesundheit.
Erev Tov, can you hear me without a microphone? Erev Tov, it is a great pleasure to be here. I would like to thank Rabbi Kelman for the special opportunity. It's a pleasure to meet friends here. We left 10 years ago. It's a pleasure to meet new friends and to sit together and learn. And I would like to thank you for this very, very special opportunity. To be here, Gimel Elul, to think about Rav Kook, about the most interesting leader, gives a special pleasure to think about our generation, about where we are, Chodesh Tshuva, and I'm happy to present you here a topic on Rav Kook. But before I start that, I would like to say a big, big shakoach to Rabbi Jay. I use consistently the same slide. You know it meanwhile. You missed it Sunday. But I think that if we talk about Torah in motion, I want to show you a proof Midoraita about Torah in motion. It says in Parshat, in Sefer Shmot, that when you build the Aron HaKodesh, always there are these sticks connected. The other Klei Mikdash were removed, and they were attached for traveling and removed when they were in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. But the sticks of the Aron are always there. The Netziv says, because the Torah is not at home, only in Eretz Yisrael. So it has to ongoing, it's on the way. It's always in motion. However, Rav Hirsch says that wherever the Torah is, and it goes to the Golus, to Germany, to Europe, it is Aur Lagoyim, it is always a new enlightenment wherever it is. So according to the both Shitot, which are very contradicting, one they have in common. The Torah is in motion. And that's what I want to show you here with the animation Lo Yasuru Mimeno. That's a proof for Torah in motion, and it's a pleasure to be here the 10th year of Rabbi Jay's activities, and I have to emphasize Rabbi Jay and Ilana, who are doing this wonderful organization together, addressing interesting questions, raising interesting discussions. I think that is a very special pleasure. I had the pleasure to be here at the conference, which was outstanding. I wish you a lot of success in your future activities and a big shukoyach what you did so far. I think the town is very privileged with your activities. Bahatzlacha rabba. Rav Kook, I would like to address the topic of Rav Kook. I'm not sure how much you are familiar. I, in Switzerland, didn't learn too much about him. I learned a lot about Samson Rabino Samson Raphael Hirsch. He was like in the Orthodox communities in Switzerland. His teachings and his writings are really very beautiful. These were the big stars, the big star in the community in Switzerland, in Frankfurt before. In Israel today, you will find big, big streets called Haroe, Harav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. You will find very, very little streets named Rishal Hirsch, just to compare. Mostly these are little dead ends. And I think that reflects very well. Every generation has its leaders. Every generation has special challenges. The Gemara explains, Dor Dor V'Dor Shav, every generation has his own speakers, his darshanim. Rav Kook had a special generation. I want to emphasize very clearly, he lived from 1865 and 1935, 2 years after Hitler took over, 13 years before Medinat Yisrael. He lived in a special time. Don't get mixed up with everything that is quoted today about Rav Kook and what is done in the name of Rav Kook. That's the year he tafresh tzadihei, he left Taulam Hazeh. It's true, he was quoted, he was mentioned, politics and many, many things were said in his name, what we would have said. But I want to be very clear. He lived Dor Dor V'Dor Shav. We live in another generation, some 70 plus years later. It's certainly helpful to think about him, but not everything he said in his time is relevant for today. Gemara Mefureshet Baba Batra, a person should not quote another Chacham for his generation without making clear he lived in a certain generation. There is certainly a lot to learn for our generation from many Chachamim, but we have to put it into context pre-Holocaust. A lot of the things he said, would he have said it afterwards? We don't know. Can we speculate Gesinntheit as much as we want? But these are not more than speculations. They are certainly very stimulating. Now, I used to bring handouts, but Kinko's is changed. I found my printers in Israel, and actually I have today everything online. So you'll find the entire presentation there. If somebody wants to look at it or to teach it, you're free to do so. The presentation, I took it from our daughter. She was bat mitzvah three and a half years ago, and we learned that topic, so I asked her permission to use it, and she fully agreed. As long as she doesn't have to give the talk, she was fine with that. And I would like to give the background. Now, I can explain you in two ways why it's in Hebrew. The simple way is because I haven't had no time to translate. I will not tell you that. I should come prepared. The much better explanation is I'm so happy that Rav Kook, he would certainly be happy to give a talk here in Or Chaim, but he would certainly be happy to give it in Hebrew. So I don't know if that is really a convincing explanation. I have it only in Hebrew, and I'm happy to present it. If somebody wants to have more details, he can look it up there. I want to give a historical background about his time, his biography, and I would like to give his biography, to present the biography with the Divrei Torah. And I think that is very meaningful. His Divrei Torah, in the historical context, bring his personality to life. I can tell a list according to Aleph Bet, what he said, according to his topics, what he said, but it is much more, it's his own story to say, what did he say to a certain event? How did he respond? And if there is a certain scholar who wrote the encyclopedia, you go from A to Z, and that's what he did. But his life was actually an ongoing response to what happened in the generation. And I think that is a very beautiful insight. Rav Jay told me that you will have the privilege here to hear Dr. Mirsky, Yehuda Mirsky. He has quoted his PhD, and he wrote a beautiful analysis, a PhD doctorate in Harvard, about Rav Kook till the age of 39 when he made Aliyah. I will certainly not have the same level to present as Dr. Mirsky had. I quoted his work. I will give you some thoughts from his writings, but the real privilege to hear him, you will have here directly from him. I would like to summarize his contribution and to think about the special contribution about Rav Kook. And actually, that was one of the most fascinating topics when I studied it with my daughter, with our daughter Shlomit. What is the meaning of Rav Kook for you? And interesting, Nadine found online, on Google, 10 famous people in the history of Zionism. Herzl, Ben-Gurion, I don't know who was on the list, religious, non-religious people. And people were asked in a non-religious school, parents of in a non-religious school, who was the most important personality in the history of Zionism? And it was Rav Kook, also for non-religious people. And I think here we have something very, very interesting, that there is a high, very, very strong appreciation for him. We learned it with Shlomit, and I decided I would like to go to my Rabbanim. I learned from them many things, including Rav Kook, and asked them, why is he so special? And we were together, we met several people, and it was very, very interesting. Actually, the interesting part would be to ask, what is the meaning of Rav Kook for each of us, but we have first to present it. But I was told in a good talk, the most important thing is to say what is important at the end, to say it at the beginning. Therefore, I discuss it already now. We went to Rav Amital, Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav Amital escaped Hungary in 39, and was running away from the Germans. He was in the camps. He came to Eretz Yisrael and was a Rosh Yeshiva, Zichrono Livracha. And we were there with my parents, Motgeret Yiddish. We spoke in Yiddish. And I asked Rav Mital, what is so unique about Rav Kook? Rav Mital told the story when he escaped, when he left home, he took his talit and tefillin, a sidur and a chumash, and a little booklet from Rav Kook. And with that, he came to Eretz Yisrael. Why Rav Kook? What is so unique? So he told me in Yiddish, a hot keret zazach. He was talking, I don't know how you translate that into English, to the point. He was talking to the point. The Jewish people is all over the world. The Holocaust started. There was a lot of hatred. There is a new development in Eretz Yisrael. And he spoke about that. And he addressed the really important issues right away. We met other scholars. We met Rabbi Yoel Binun and of Sherlo, and I will mention them later on to special Divrei Torah. That's an important issue. Why was he so? And so that is the important point. What can we really learn from his insights? That's what I tried to show, the different colors of Rav Kook. And for philosophers, he is a great, great example of philosophy. For Talmudic explanations, outstanding. Halacha lemaase, beautiful. For leadership, a really star. For piyut, for poetry, wonderful insights. And he has many, many colors. Interesting, he says in his opening speech to the Rabbanut, when he got appointed, he said, we have to address the special features of a rabbi. He is not only Mazal Tov. He is not only the rabbi is not only the person who makes a psak, kosher, or trefe. He has to be a leadership in halacha, in thoughts. Everything has to be included. That's what he said about the Rabbanut. That is himself. So these are the many colors. Here the historical background. I start in Basel because I was born there, but that's not the main reason. In 1897 was the first Zionistic Congress in Basel. Rav Kook died, Herzl died in 1904. Rav Kook was in Eretz Yisrael at that time. We will address that shortly. The Jewish people suffered in France, Dreyfus, anti-Semitism, was at that stage certainly active in many, many centers in Europe. He was born in Eastern Europe, Lita. Here is his native town, not far away here, a little Shtetl. But I would like to give his interesting background here. On the one hand, the Lamdanut, the top wonderful yeshivot of Volozhin, students of the Gaon Mivilna, Chachmei HaMusar, an outstanding scholarship in Talmudic research, in Talmudic Lamdanut, on one hand. On the other hand, the second century of Hasidut, Lubavitch, many other Hasidim, I will tell you in a moment why I took specifically Lubavitch, and this tension, Litvak, Misnagdim, which was that at the border of Hasidic centers, Lamdanut centers, here you see Vilna, Rav Kook was born somewhere in between. It's not that there was a clear border in between, it was all over, but that was the tension in the situation, but that was also not only for the general background, the cultural background, in the family of Rav Kook, Avraham Yitzchak, you will see in a moment, these are the two names of Avraham and Yitzchak. I divided his biography in four chapters. You see it here at the age, the young Rav Kook, the very young Rav Kook, till he was rabbi in the age of 30 plus, when he came to Eretz Yisrael at the age of 39, when he was a short time in Chutz La'aretz, in Europe, he went for a conference, that is the third period in his life, and later on when he turned to Eretz Yisrael, and he was the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, the first one, that will be the first one. So here we have a division. And I think, I don't want to be a yeke too much, but it is helpful to structure his activities in different ages. It is very interesting to analyze what he did later on in his life, what is found in the early writings. And Dr. Mirsky is really an expert in that field, and to see on one hand the continuity and the same sources, it's the same Rav Kook in his young age and his later age, but to see also how he developed it and brought it to different stages later on in his life. And that is extremely interesting. Interesting that his commentary on Masechet Brachot and Masechet Shabbat, named Ein Ayah, the eye of Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Ayah, this commentary was written over 40, 50 years, he added, and he had his little tzeteloch. Students reported that he was saying something, and toch kedei kach, when he explained something, he wrote it down and put it in his pocket. Or he just said it, and somebody else wrote it down and wrote a paper on that. I will show you some of these examples. He was ongoing, it was like a spring, ma'ayan hamitgabir, that he said his explanations, but the Gemara was like his daily work. And from the Gemara, he had meaningful messages for what happened in the generation. So the Gemara and reality was brought together by Rav Kook. And that's an interesting style, genre, to write and to make publish his ideas. We start with the childhood. Griva, not far away from Dvinsk, Reb Simcha Meir Midvinsk was there. Other Gdolei Ador, it was a little city. His mother came from a Hasidic background, and his mother's name was Pele Zlata, and her grandfather was named Rabbi Avraham. His father came from Mishpacha from Volozhin, the yeshiva, the famous yeshiva Ben Tzivni Volozhin, and students of the Gaon, and there were the Misnagdim, and he is from the family of the Levush, Levush on Shulchan Aruch, and his name was Yitzchak. Rav Maimon wrote a biography on Rav Kook, and on three pages he explains this idea in much detail. He was Avraham, and he was Yitzchak. He was the son of his father and of his mother, of Hasidut and Lamdanut, which at that time was like a mixed marriage. People did not like the idea that you have both in a family. I think that is a very interesting characterization feature of Rav Kook, that he had a deep, sharp insight on a systematic and analytic way on many sukkiot, but it has extremely warm and emotional and meaningful personal effect on the same idea. And interesting, when he gave the opening ceremony for the Hebrew University in his late 60s, you will see exactly this idea. He was capable to write long piskei halacha, analyzing the sugyot, and he was capable to say a vort, an idea, and put it in a very interesting context. You don't really follow all the sources, but it's just meaningful and sweet. Chassidut. This combination is something very, very specific, very special. He studied under his father, and at young age, he left for an hour and a half. He was walking to hear special shiurim in Dvinsk. Today, it's the same city, another part of the city, but he was walking, and he described as one of his family described that. Here you see the background again. I forgot to show that. On the one hand, the Hasidic background, Lamdanut Shel HaGaon, and it's all together. He was born Tetzain Elul and died Gimel Elul some 70 years later. That's the biography. Born here in Dvinsk. He studied afterwards in Volozhin for a year and a half. And as you know, the Shiva in Volozhin, which has a very, very interesting history. Once they had a high level of Lamdanut, Torah went out to all the environment from there. And they had difficulties to survive for financial, political reasons. The Rosh Yeshiva said for Rav Kook, Avrum Yitzchak, who was there for a year and a half, who studied day and night, for him it is worthwhile to make all effort to keep a yeshiva. Few hundred students were studying there. The Rosh Yeshiva said for him, if it would be only for him, it's worthwhile to make all the efforts that he should learn. A student reported, Dr. Yuda told me that, Mirsky. I heard him exactly a year ago after I read his paper, his work. We invited him to Alon Shvut, and he gave last year the talk. And he said one of the friends reported that he was sitting day and night in the Beit Midrash, and in the middle he took a little shtendel. He stood up and read it and sat down again. And he did it a few times a day. So somebody came to him and asked, what did he say? What happens in between? He studies, he learns. So once a guy came to him and asked him, what is he saying? And he showed him a tzetele, Pasuk mitilim, Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamit. I'm always God in your presence. He was studying, but in between he wanted to feel, it's not a text that I'm learning, something theoretical. I want to feel the Hashgachat Hashem, the presence of God. He was in Volozhin and left to another yeshiva. You see here the name, which I don't know how to pronounce it properly. But the name of the place is, in Yiddish, sounds much better. It's Ponivetsch. That's the city of Ponivetsch. The famous Ponivetsch yeshiva. And his father-in-law was Aderet Avraham David Rabinovich Ta'omim. And he got, thank you very much, Chaim. His father-in-law was the Rosh Yeshiva. He got married, and unfortunately, half a year later, his wife passed away from a disease. Rav Kook had a lot of tragedies in his family, in his life. And that time, before he got married for a second time and started to be a rabbi, Chofetz Chaim, who was older than him, they died more or less the same time, but he was many years older than him. He highly recommended this young bachur and identified him at a young age as a Gaon Hador. And after this tragedy, with his wife, he went to little state Zemlis. For 3 years, and at that time his wife passed away. Sorry, I presented it wrong. Chofetz Chaim recommended him and referred him to this place as one of the Kochav HaAtid, a future star of She'ole B'Shmei HaTorah. That's the way he gave a recommendation. After the tragedy, Rav Kook went to Rebbe Elyoshiv. It's not the same Rebbe Elyoshiv. I know that he got 102 years old, but that's another generation, that's another century. That's his grandfather. And this grandfather, Reb Shlomo Elyashiv, he was a Kabbalist, and Rav Kook was studying under him for half a year. Rebbe Elyoshiv said the same. He never had a student like him. Avinoam Rosnak, who is head of the philosophy department, Jewish philosophy, and he wrote a wonderful book on Rav Kook in Hebrew. Avinoam Rosnak, R. Beivrit Reish Vav Zayin Nun Kuf. He wrote a book on Rav Kook and described on 15 pages his study of Halakha and Kabbalah. He was deeply, deeply in the world of Yeshiva. In his personal crisis, he went for half a year, paid by his little shtetle, and learned Kabbalah. And that is a time when he learned to, the way Rosnack explains it, to combine contradictions, to cope with tragedies, to deal with disasters. At that time, and afterwards, he moved on. And he was rabbi, he remarried, I think a year or 2 years later. He remarried and got to another state, another place called Boisk. From there, he got the appointment to Eretz Yisrael. I would like to share with you now some ideas from the early years of Rav Kook at that time. I think this aspect that he learned Kabbalah, and I think that's a field I have great interest to understand contradictions. In Hebrew, it's called Ichud HaFachim, the unity of the contradictions. Something can be very bad, but it is actually the messenger of something good. And this optimism, which Rav Kook had, is something very unique. Nothing will weaken him. I had the pleasure today to have a long talk with Yitz Kurtz, and I asked him, who is Rav Kook for you? So I keep doing that at every opportunity, and he said, you know, I don't have to tell you a whole sentence, a whole speech, I can say it in one word. Right? That's Yitz Kurtz style, short and sharp. What's the word in one word, Rav Kook? He said, optimism. And I think if I have to pinpoint where do we see it in his writings, this strategy, a young man who loses his wife, started his career and lost his wife, a widow, left alone, it's not that he is very, very rich and can start again, it's that easy, it's were difficult times. He learned in the Kabbalah, obviously at a level that I'm not familiar with Kabbalah, but all bad things are just the beginning of something very good. And that is something very unique. His optimism is so wonderful for himself, is so wonderful for his generation and his writing, that it leaves a certain question, what would he have said after the Holocaust? Which puts him, as I mentioned at the beginning, in a certain time, the Holocaust is a disaster, even for his great optimism, it's too much to be just move on with optimism. What would he have said after that? And it's interesting, he mentioned Hitler in his writing at the end. We'll talk about that in a moment again. I give here some, I will skip this one. He has a wonderful booklet, a little booklet, called Chevesh Pe'er on Tfilin, Halachical Analysis of Ilchot Tfilin. And at the end, he has same. First of all, he didn't publish that in his own name. He called himself Kadi. Kohen Dato Yafa. A Kohen who studies. He didn't want to put his name. He wanted to hear what other people say. Say it frankly, openly. You don't have to mention it's me. Tell me what you think about the booklet. And he gave Shiurim B'Shem Kadi, who is himself. He said he learned it from him. And at the end, there are seven drashot on Hilchot Tfilin, which are very interesting, which he explains later on in Drush B'Yiddish. It's available in Yiddish, and it's translated into Hebrew. And I would like to share with you one of the ideas which he said there. First of all, it's interesting that Rav Gaon Mivilna had always his Tfilin on, part of his Dveikut. Chabadnikim, to the present day, the Dveikus and the Kesher is with the Tfilin. It's another kesher they have, and Rav Kook, ubesofo ma'amar lahamonei am besafa hamedubaret beYiddish. So he has one of the beautiful ideas he has at the end there, that you have tefillin shel rosh and tefillin shel yad. Tefillin shel rosh, there are four different parshiot. We have the tefillin divided in four different parshiot, different in the bite, different sections. In the Tfilin Shel Yad, it's all one, no separation. And Rav Kook explains there, because what we do in our mind, our thinking, can be very specific and detailed and contradicting. There are different sections. But if it comes to our hand, k'neged levavchem, next to our hearts, if we act and we work, our operation has to present a harmony. And therefore, there is a contradiction between tefillin sheliyad and tefillin shel rosh. That's a very beautiful insight from Rav Kook's writing, which I found also in Rav Hirsch. That is one of the most fascinating little comments in one of his letters, Igrot Raya, which was said later, but it certainly goes back to that time. And he compares the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, the two Talmudim written in Babylon and in Eretz Yisrael. He had a genius mind that Talmudic sources from both Talmudim were like present to him, and he compared them all the time. And that's a new style. Might be other people did it, but certainly not to his to the depth and his systematic approach. If there is any machloket, it says in this week's parasha, ki yipale mimcha davar lamishpat bin dam ledam, you should go to the most experienced scholars, to Yerushalayim, and ask there. That's the whole context. I will not focus on that. What is the machloket in a special issue? What is the machloket bedavar? Which kind of question? The Bavli says, davar zo halacha. The Yerushalmi says, davar zo agada. Halacha are the practical laws according to the Bavli. The same word is explained in the Yerushalmi, davar are the thoughtful insights of the Midrash, of the Agadata. It's the same word and two Talmudim. And why? Because it says in Chutz La'aretz, in Bavel, what keeps us together is the halacha. So if we have a discussion about something, what is something? Halacha. Because that is what keeps the Jewish community together. Do we have the same heksha? Don't we have the same heksha? Do we do it this way or another way? We talk about halacha. That is Dvar Hashem. In Eretz Yisrael, there is a lot of spirit. There are thoughts, there are insight. It's not a machloket, a contradiction. It is a different emphasis. And who is right? The answer is very simple. Only both together are right. And he shows there is no contradiction between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The spirit of the Jewish people comes to full expression only in Eretz Yisrael. The formal survival of halachot, sure, that is Torah Chutz La'aretz. And the Bavli created the whole halacha, which is the Talmud, but the focus is there. It's not, of course, not true that the whole Bavli is only Drushim and Agadatot, and the whole Bavli is only, it's not true, but it's a different emphasis, and it's a beautiful letter, which explains Rav Zevin, a great scholar at his time and later on, said, Rav Kook, there was nobody in the world over the last generation who had such a shlita, understanding of halacha and agadata, both. Not you understand field A and also the field B, but you could bring it together. And I think it gets evident from Rav Kook's writing, because that's what he says. Dvar Hashem is halacha combined with agada. And I will show that to you in a moment. He has a beautiful insight, which I'm not going to elaborate, on the six Sidrei Mishnah. How the six Sidrim, the six parts of the Mishnah, are a philosophical development, psychological development from the individual to the Jewish people. I would like to show you a comparable idea to Birkat HaMazon. Rabbi Jay asked me to talk about tefillah, and you were flexible enough to say, okay, I told you very frankly, I don't have a full lecture ready on tefillah, but I had some of the topics ready, so I prepared it specifically. L'chabed et Rabbi Jay. And here we have a fascinating Gemara, known from many sources, that the four brachot in Kriyot Shema, in Birkat HaMazon, were established by the first bracha, by Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Am Yisrael got the man during the desert. The second bracha, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, by Yehoshua. The third bracha, by David and Shlomo, when they lived in Eretz Yisrael and built the Beit HaMikdash. And the fourth bracha was introduced after the war in Yavne, after the war in Beitel, when Jewish people were killed after Bar Kochva, and they were brought to the Jewish kvura, to the funeral. What is the hatov v'hamitiv? Hatov shelo hisrichu v'hamitiv shenitnu l'kvura. It is good that these dead bodies didn't have a bad smell. V'hamitiv, that were brought to a Jewish funeral. And Rav Kook asks, Ribbono shel Olam, what is the meaning of these brachot? And I think that's a beautiful analysis, which we can talk for an hour about that. He says, that is the development of the Jewish personality and the Jewish psychological history. First, it starts in Egypt. Everybody has just to make sure he's in the desert and he has something to eat. It's not good to be in the desert without food. That's Moshe. The simple physical survival. Stage one. But we need a national survival. We cannot stay in Chutz La'atz forever in the desert. There is not man for 1,000 years. It's a transition. We come to Eretz Yisrael and we have our homeland. But the homeland has a spiritual center, Yerushalayim. And the spiritual center in Yerushalayim has on one hand Malchut, kingdom, kingship, and independence. He said that in the beginning of the 20th century, and they have a spiritual center, the Beit HaMikdash. And if we are in the Galut, we have always to be aware, even though the Jewish people looks very dead, very non-vivant, not vital to survive, we have to remember the dead body is not dead. It doesn't go the process of a dead body to have a bad smell and to... There is still a future. And here he says an explanation which I think Yitz Kurtz is right. It doesn't make sense that for each sandwich I have to remember the dead bodies in Beitar. But according to Rav Kook, it tells me something totally different. Even though it looks like dead, we never give up our hope that the dead bodies, who are not really dead, they will once be revived when we come back to Eretz Yisrael. So this Gemara, I couldn't find a better explanation, and if we want to learn features of Rav Kook, Yitz is right to call that endless optimism. That is the background on Rav Kook. Hapratim mitchabrim el haklal. The individual, his personal, physical, national, spiritual values are only in Eretz Yisrael, and if for a moment we are not there, we shouldn't think it's the end of the story. It is just temporarily out of function, but once the dead body will be revived. The Dor Hatchia, the nation of the revival of Am Yisrael, certainly knows that. So that's fascinating how his optimism comes to talk. I will skip this one. And we move to Eretz Yisrael, the second step in his history. When he came to Eretz Yisrael, he had got a very interesting appointment. There were many rabbis around in Eastern Europe. People heard about him, his thoughts, his capabilities, his insights, a young rabbi in his late 30s. And he was called to come to Eretz Yisrael, and he accepted it. I guess many other got invitations, some of them, but he took that and saw his future in Eretz Yisrael. And he came to Eretz Yisrael, was the chief rabbi of Yafo and the surroundings, not of Tel Aviv, for a simple reason: Tel Aviv wasn't there yet. He came to Eretz Yisrael and wrote some very, very beautiful halachot and insights. That's the invitation. Chacham Balair, and at the age of 39, he was well known as a famous rabbi, a young rabbi who came to Eretz Yisrael. And a lot is written here. After 3 months, when he were in Eretz Yisrael, Herzl passed away. A major event in Jewish history of that time. Because the Zionism, whether you agreed or you didn't agree, was a major movement and event. For those who were Zionists, it was a terrible loss. For those who were not Zionists, it was a major event as well. So how did we respond? And people reported the day they got the bad message about Herzl's death, the same day, Rav Kook gave a shiur in his little Beit Midrash, which we saw just a moment ago here. That's his home. Sorry, the Beit Midrash is not here. That's in Switzerland, in Basel. And Herzl at the Rhine on the famous bridge. He gave a beautiful, beautiful speech. which we should learn for many hours. It's a wonderful insight. It doesn't mention with one word of Cook, Herzl, not with one word. But it is clear it was given the same evening at Hamisped Birushalayim, the eulogy in Jerusalem, talking about Herzl's death. And he talks there about Mashiach will have two aspects, Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. He analyzes the Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Daf Gimel, which fascinating insights and connections to the Zohar and other Gemarot in Perek Chelek. He puts it together. It's 15 pages in Hebrew. It's a real wonderful classical writing of Rav Kook. Briefly, there is a body in every person and there is a soul. And sometimes the body helps and we need the soul in combination. If the combination is not there, nobody will survive. And Herzl was an outstanding beginning of the body who comes back to Eretz Yisrael. But the soul is not yet ready to accept him. He doesn't mention by a word Herzl, but that's exactly, he says, sometimes if we don't understand that the body and the soul need each other, there might be a terrible disaster and the loss. And that is what we experience today. So it's clear that he talks about that. He saw in Herzl the structure, the formal structure of Geulat Israel. And he says, if the body doesn't understand that there are spiritual meanings, might be that as himself, it will never ever work. We have to understand the combination of the Chomri and the Ruchani, the spiritual and the material aspects of Geulat Israel. V'hinei betor ikra de Mashiach ben Yosef, nidgala chizyon atzionut bedoreinu. Mashiach ben Yosef, like Joseph, who saved the Jewish people in Egypt, he didn't have a temple, a Beit HaMikdash, and a Torah teaching, but the Jewish family survived in Egypt due to Yosef. That is the Mashiach ben Yosef, and we are guilty if we don't understand him. This beautiful insight comes to a further very, very special expression, also in his writings, how he understood secular Zionism, the secular world, as part of the harmony of the Geula. And he wrote a beautiful paper, paper called Ma'amar Hador, where he says, the paper on our generation. And he says, our generation, kulo chayav v'kulo zakai. Gemayin Masechet Sanhedrin. Everything is beautiful and outstanding, and everything is a disaster in our generation. For our generation, both is true. And he has a lot of criticism and a lot of enthusiasm for his generation. I would like to share with you now, he had an interesting paper on one of the Shomer HaTzair who was killed, and somebody asked him if it is allowed to go to his levaya, because the Gemara says if there is a person who is poresh midachei tzibur and he doesn't fulfill religious obligations, halachot, one should not respect him at his death. It's true, Masechet Tzmachot says that, it's Shulchan Aruch. So he was asked whether to go to this Levaya or not. The answer is clear. Before I finish the question, you know what he will say. And he said, Poresh midachei tzibur, somebody who leaves the Jewish community, these are not people who left. They are leaders, in a certain sense, of the challenge of our generation today. It's true, they left Halacha, but they actually fulfill, in our generation, what the religious society in Chutz La'aretz doesn't recognize, Eretz Yisrael. So we have to learn that he never left, might be we left one aspect, but only if we know to respect them, we will have the completeness together. We come now to the best slide, very soon, which I have a lot of Bitul Zman and a lot of Bitul Torah in my slides. The next one is the most craziest one of all my slides, but I like it very much. He decided he wants to go and see all the Moshavot. Today we have Kvi Shesh, you are in an hour and a half, you are in the north. That time it took several days to get there, it was quite dangerous. That's Beit Sha'an, Kineret, and the Kibbutzim, where Moshe Dayan was born, and other classical Migdal. And he wanted to go to the Masal Moshavot. Interesting, his big, I wouldn't say a fighter, his big Bar Machloket, Rav Sonnenfeld, who very, very much respected him. I had the pleasure to discuss it with his grandson, how his grandfather spoke very respectfully about Rav. His grandfather spoke very, very respectfully about Rav Kook. It's true they had a lot of machloket, but machloket l'shem shamayim. And he decided to go to the Masah Moshavot to see the Yeshuvim in the north. Rav Kook wanted to do that for several reasons. He wanted to know Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to be in touch with the people. He wanted to see what they do. He wanted to acknowledge what they do. And he wanted to be in touch with them in order to build up new activities and new open new horizons for his beautiful activities. And it was a trip of almost a month to get from Yafo. Here you see the way he went up with a group of some 10 people, rabbis. Mostly where then were looking of Shemitah, of making of Kashrut, and of course there was no Shemitah, and no Kashrut, and no Shabbat, but there was a lot of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And they came to a certain place, where at night, the rabbis were sitting down in their little corner with their kosher food, and they were learning, talking, whatever, and all outside they heard dances, singing. The kibbutznikim started to dance and to sing. And Rav Kook got interested. Music, Chassidish, Atish. It's not exactly Leipzig, Geschmack, right? A little Geschmack. He went outside and he saw they were all dancing. He saw a kibbutznik dancing. What did he do? He joined them by dancing. Okay? And after 3 minutes, he told this one of the kibbutznikim who were all dancing Hora. He said, come on, my friend. And they left for 3 minutes and they came back. What happened? What do you think what happened? Look at the slide. They switched the clothes. And Rav Kook, he wanted to be a kibbutznik. And the kibbutznik should be a rabbi. It sounds like Purim Spiel. It's not Purim Spiel at all. It is the best example in a very popular way of Ichud HaHafachim. We combine contradictions. And it is reported, I looked that up carefully. This story is written in one of the books who reported the story of the famous rabbi. And it's also reported in one of the books where it happened in Degania that they mentioned this evening some differences in the report. Rav Kook spoke to them and said, we have to dance together and to celebrate Eretz Yisrael. And we have to dance together knowing that we are experiencing a very special generation. But you have to know, do not get disconnected. You should better have Shabbat and Kashrut and all Hilchot Shemitah, and we should dance together. You should be capable to dance as rabbis, and I should be capable to dance as a kibbutznik. Vayirkedu ad or habukah, and they were dancing till the next morning started. I think that is the most beautiful, popular translation of Ichud HaFachim. The contradictions are all one. There were issues about Shemitah, famous Machlokot. We are not talking about Machlokot, Chodesh Elul, and it's a very long topic to explain to understand his understanding, his insights. I would like to describe now briefly in the remaining time what happened later in his life. He went to Europe for Agudat Yisrael in Europe to get support for Eretz Yisrael. And he told them very clearly, all the communities in Europe who didn't have too much money, there were difficult times for everybody, times of First World War, and communities in Europe, Eastern Europe, in Germany, including in Switzerland, where he was actually adopted by a family in St. Gallen, and he wrote there a lot for 2 years. He was rabbi in London. And there he found one of his students, Rav Hanazir, who met him in the early morning's hour when Rav Kook was praying Parshat Akedah and dancing in his little room. He reports how he met him first, and he says the famous three words, Matzati li Rav. Rav David HaKohen was a philosophy student from the yeshivas who came to Basel also to study philosophy, and he was looking for new leaders to him. And he found Rav Kook, and he says, Matzati li Rav, a very beautiful story about that. He was afterwards in England, some influence on the Balfour Declaration, and during that time, he wrote the letter on vegetarian thoughts, and Shalom, I will skip that, sorry. It took him several years till he had the opportunity to come back to Eretz Yisrael, 3 years. It was a very productive time in his writings. A lot of his tshuvas are written in Chutz La'aretz on topics in Eretz Yisrael. I would like to spend one little interesting letter which gave me a lot of thoughts. It's another time, it's in 34, when Rav Meir Shapira, Zichrono Livracha, Rosh Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, built his famous yeshiva. And it was a big celebration. It was one of the biggest yeshivot in Jewish history. It lasted for 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. And everybody celebrated him, congratulated him. And there's a letter from Rav Kook who told him, Kvod Morenu Harav, Rav Kook was in his late 60s, he was a young Rosh Yeshiva in his early 40s, and he wrote him a letter, Kvod Torateinu, Kvod Torato. Congratulations for your great achievements, but don't you understand that it's the wrong place for yeshiva? Don't you realize that yeshivot should be built in Eretz Yisrael? Don't you realize that Hitler is taking over and it will be the end of the Jewish people in Chutz La'aretz? Very sharp words, a very clear vision. And Rav Meir Shapira, Baruch Hashem, 10,000s of people study yeshiva, study Gemara every day, Daf Yomi. But the vision of Rav Kook to his success, which was indeed a success and could be done obviously only in Lublin, Rav Kook had very sharp comments on that. He came to Eretz Yisrael, was chief rabbi, had a long list of students, and built his yeshiva, Yeshivat Merkaz Harav, and he said, this yeshiva should open new insights, also in secular studies, and combining secular studies in Eretz Yisrael, because we need Torah Eretz Yisrael. Let me show you here one of the most powerful Divrei Torah. Rabbi J, you wanted something on Tefillah. Here we go. Tkiyat Shofar. The last Rosh Hashanah of Rav Kook. He died 35. For 35 Rosh Hashanah, he wasn't alive anymore. 34, 11 months before his Ptira, he gave a drasha in the Old City. And our neighbor's father, the father of Rav Meidan, of Meir Meidan, he was a young student studying in Yerushalayim these days, and he heard the speech, the drasha by Rav Kook, and he wrote it down. He reported it. And Rav Kook brought the halacha from Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara. If we have a shofar, if we do not have a shofar from a kosher animal, not the classical animals listed in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, it's a trefa animal. For instance, chayat trefa, chayat torefet, a wild animal. Are we allowed to use it for tkiyat shofar or not? And the Gemara says, if there is no other shofar around, you can use this animal's shofar, but don't say a bracha. And Rav Kook explains that. Let me explain you this halacha. Shofar mi behemat mea. Im ein lo shofar acher yitkabo, achen lo yivarech alav. And the Mishneh Berurah, who was a personal friend and mentor to Rav Kook, he says, if you don't have a shofar from a kosher animal, take the shofar from a non-kosher animal, you can blow without bracha. Mahapshat, what's the idea? Rav Kook, the posek, and Rav Kook, the darshan, comes to one drasha. And he says, in our generation, the shofar has a strong voice. The shofar, somebody is blowing the shofar. Kedush Baruch Hu is blowing the shofar of Kibbutz Galiot. But it's not a kosher shofar. It's a wild animal who blows it. We have terrible anti-Semitism. But it is the Tkiyat Shofar of Kibbutz Galiot. And that's what he said. We should read this text. Im efshar litkoa b'shofar kasher legeula. In our then generation, we have nations she'enam notnim lanu manoach. And he says, even though this shofar from a chayat me'ah, we have to learn to read that this shofar is also shofar geula, even though it's from a wild animal. Who are these animals? Amalek, Filtora, Hitler. He quotes Hitler. 34 September, Hitler took over less than a year and a half, March 33. He was very clear about that. He was an old man, Rav Kook, in his late 60s, early 70s, I think, late 60s. He was sick. He was exhausted. He was sharp and said, the animal is calling. The shofar has a special tkiah of kibbutz galiot. Why doesn't the Jewish people understand that that is a kibbutz galiot shofar? We can't say a bracha for that. I mean, it's shocking to remember he passed away, and I want to emphasize, he said, I'm not sure if he knew what he said, to which extent he was right. He was right much more than I think a normal being could have thought. I'm not trying to say he was a Navi. He was much more. He was a smart man. The Navi Levav Chochma, he has a long paper on that. We don't need Naviim. We need Chachamim and Jewish leadership. And he said, if we don't understand that our generation is Kibbutz Galiot, we will never understand that Tkiyat Shofar in our generation. It's fascinating to see how clear he was. I will not comment, Chas V'Shalom, on what other Jewish leaders said in Europe before the Shoah. Al Tadin Et Chavercha, and who are we, and certainly who I am, to say anything about that. But Rav Kook had a sharp vision, and I think it's not by coincidence that Rav Kook, his name in Hebrew was Shur, to see, in Yiddish Kook, and in Hebrew Haro'eh. He had a sharp vision. He knew what his generation, what's going on, and he realized what will happen in a few years later, and he said it so clearly, and his spirit is very powerful. It's true. If you reflect on Rabbanim today, I mentioned Rav Hirsch, who has a little street today. He was certainly one of the greatest leaders in Jewish history in Frankfurt am Main, very Bukovetic and very convenient for his generation, very appropriate for his generation of Orthodox rabbis in Germany. Rav Soloveitchik, after the Holocaust, had other challenges. It's true he was born and was already a rabbi in the States during the Holocaust. The writings of Rav Kook have something very powerful in them. He saw a new future, and might be it's better he didn't see the Holocaust. What would he have said after that? It's hard for some people to say that his enthusiasm and optimism continues after Auschwitz. So we don't know what he said, but I think it's important to hear his voice. Just to finish the story, he established his Rabbanut Harashit together with Rav Meir Chayuziel, which is a fascinating story for the future generations. It's not for the topic for today, but of course that is a terrific insight that he realized we need a chief rabbi. And he realized we need both, and he realized we need compromise between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. We can't afford to fight. No, we don't have the luxury to fight between Sfardim and Ashkenazim, and therefore he established it two parts, but working very nicely together, of Yaakov Meir and afterwards Chayuziel, the chief rabbis. I would like to share with you this beautiful drasha which he gave at the Hebrew University opening in 1925. And he took a pasuk when everybody came to the Hebrew University. Balfour was there, Herbert Samuel, a lot of famous people from the entire world, and he used the pasuk and said, look around, Se'i saviv enayich ure'i, all came here. And he says, Al tir'i, don't be afraid. V'nahart ufachad v'rachav levavech, your heart will be fearing and will be widening. It means a narrow heart and a very open heart. And he is giving like a drush of a Sfas Emes. Why do we have openness of our heart and happiness? And why do we fear and experience anxiety in like a narrow heart? And he says, because the university brings us a new insight for the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. There are beautiful challenges in a positive, in a negative sense. That's what he said at the opening. We should revive our Torah for Eretz Yisrael, for Kibbutz Galuyot, in a scientific, academic way. He had a very interesting, similar speech at the opening of his yeshiva, and it's interesting to compare that. That's the opening. I had here a very beautiful video clip of 12 seconds, but it doesn't work in the computer last month. I just realized today he talks with the whole body. It's hard to see him in the camera because the whole body dances when he talks. I've summarized the many aspects of terrific Lamdanut, Perushim ala Gemara, Shelot v'Tshuvot, Jewish philosophy, poetry, and the tremendous insight of Manhigut, leadership, and philosophy, and new yeshiva, Rabbanut, unbelievable things he accomplished in his life. Who is my Rav Kook? I would like to leave that open for everybody. I would like to share with you two more ideas. The halakha says, so first of all, his greatness, his geonut, genius mind in Gemara, halakha, which I mentioned here, just a tremendous academic genius mind. He combined Torah min ha-shamayim and Torah la-aretz, from heaven, but Torah is on earth. And he combined it together. He brought a combination. I asked Rav Dreyfus in the Alon Shvut, who is a great expert in Rav Kook, and he told me, I can tell you the greatness of Rav Kook by one of his explanations. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbat, if somebody keeps the mitzvah of Nerot Shabbat, he will have children who are Talmidei Chachamim. And I mean, it's very good to have an insurance company for education, but I wouldn't give too much money for that. The education is too risky. With Hilchot Nerot Shabbat, you have a promise that you will have children. What's the meaning? Rav Kook explains, if you bring light to the darkness of the world, and you do it, and you bring light to the world, your children will see that and appreciate that and grow and follow your footsteps. That's the meaning, to bring light to the darkness. Rav Kook, he brought a lot of light. All his books are named Orot HaTshuva, Orot HaTorah, Orot HaKodesh, or just Orot. He brought light. Another explanation, I think his understanding of his generation, which I compare to prophecy, and I think it's more, is outstanding. Leadership with a total awareness and responsibility to understand what's going on. And that, beside of his academic accomplishment, he never left the involvement for the Jewish people to come back to Yerushalayim. Wonderful moral insights, philosophical insights of respect for human beings, for non-religious people. And there's an interesting Ishi Yekalel Elokav, the Torah says in Parshat Emor, anybody who curses his God, mot yumat. And he asks, why does the Torah not say Ish ki yekalel et Hashem? Why Elokav? And Rav Kook explains, Elokim is also the name for universal values, not only for the team. And other people have also their belief system. If a person, everybody has his belief system, has moral values in his belief system. So this pasuk includes every human being, and we should learn to respect it, and we should be careful to see that he respects it himself, and if he doesn't respect it, mot yumat, kilu, one of ours. And that might be one of the most powerful ma'amarim shel Rav Kook. He says, v'chol banayich limudei, talmidei chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. Sages, talmidei chachamim, they make a lot of freedom in the world. L'harbot sholam doesn't sound well in Hebrew, because or there is peace, or there is no peace. But there is not 15 units of peace and 150 units of peace. Peace or no peace. What does it mean, l'harbot sholam? L'harbot sholam v'rav shalom banayich. And Rav Kook says, we have to understand that peace, and not only shalom as peace, shalom as shlemut, completeness, has many, many aspects. If we realize that there are many aspects, and that is called l'harbot shalom, we bring really the peace to the world. That everybody has his place. It's not tolerance. Tolerance means that he is actually an idiot. But midelet brera, what should I do? He's my neighbor. I have to tolerate him. No, it is a tolerance in a much more positive sense, that every contradiction has something to contribute. And it is valuable a priori. Not midelet brera, we have no choice, we have to tolerate idiots. We have to learn that everybody has something meaningful to bring. And that was his insight of Lehavot Shalom by Rav Kook. Here are some of the references, particularly Yehuda Milsky's intellectual and spiritual biography of Rav Kook. I hope I could give you in these short overview some insights to his life and his legacy, and should we have the energy and the insights to learn from his time what we have to do in our time, in our life, and be more better. Chodesh Tshuva, Ani LeDodi VeDodi Li. I would like to thank you for your attention. If there is any easy question, I would be happy to discuss it.